Welcome to Artery with Isaac Avegia, a podcast on art, authorship, and anthropology. In each episode of this collaborative podcast, one anthropologist specializing in a particular cultural context has a conversation with an artist of their choosing, exploring issues of authorship and responsibility in art. In this episode, Rebecca Appleton, a postgraduate researcher at the University of Manchester, speaks with the poet Rabab Chamsuddin. I will hand over to Rebecca to introduce herself and her guest.
Welcome to this conversation between myself, I'm Rebecca Appleton, and the poet Rabab Chamsuddin. To briefly introduce myself, I'm a postgraduate researcher in social anthropology at the University of Manchester, where I'm doing PhD research on the politics of women's poetry in Beirut, Lebanon, using visual and collaborative methods. And it's through this research that I encountered Rabab's poetry. A few years ago, I watched a video of her performing her poem, Not Your Type of Woman, which won Beirut's Poetry Slam back in 2018. So yeah, this poem was a large part of why I pursued this research and what keeps me inspired with it. So I'm very much looking forward to talking to Rabab about her poetry and creative practice and her conception of herself as an artist. Hello, Rabab.
Hi, Rebecca. Thank you for receiving me.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Where am I speaking to you from?
I'm currently in the south, in a village next to Tyre. It's called Hanaway. And I'll be returning to Beirut in a few months.
Would you mind introducing yourself a bit to our listeners and telling us a little bit about your poetry?
Absolutely. I'm 25 years old. I was born in Ivory Coast in Abidjan, where I lived my early childhood. And then I repatriated with my family to Lebanon, to the south, where I currently am. It was only until 19 year old where I moved to Beirut to study literature. I've always written since I was nine. The language has changed because I used to write in French. It's my native language along with Arabic. And then I switched to English for many reasons. I was trying to, you know, communicate with some specific people who did not speak any other language. The themes of my poetry have always been the same. I was always intrigued to, you know, discover the many faces of love, and specifically the relationship between love and loss, which I think are very complementary.
Yeah, wonderful. And that might be like a perfect link to jump in with where I wanted to start with our conversation, which is with a poem of yours that is about Beirut and which you performed at the city's Poetry Slam in 2018. Yeah. It's called Not Your Type of Woman. Could you introduce the poem for our listeners?
I wrote this poem. Okay, so if I want to go back to introducing this poem, I have to go back to what Beirut means to me. Having been always writing about love and loss, I have to say that, my entire life, you know, when I used to write about love, it has always equated loss. Okay. In my childhood, the subjects of love were always unattainable. And so the love was initially impossible. And therefore, I'll try to express it as clearly as I can. And therefore, the distance between love as a concept and loss was so small that there was very little space for me to elaborate between them and create dimensions. When I moved to Beirut, I felt that Beirut had offered me a subject of love. You know, I felt that I could write to her without having to think of her writing back. And this is how it started, right? But of course, with time, the relationship that I had with Beirut or have with Beirut have changed so much. What I thought was very impersonal, what I thought was only a space of a creation, has become so, has taken so much power over me. It has taken life because we have given it life. So this poem, when I wrote it, I was still at the stage of, you know, contemplating Beirut as a space of projection. It was an object or a subject of love that I could use to create an alternative state of mind, an alternative feeling or space. And so I could romanticize it as much as I wanted to. I didn't have reality checks that were so rigid as the ones that we have today in Beirut, such as the crisis, the explosion, and so on. Beirut during that time offered me so much. I felt that I could look at things around me and you know, create a superficial or create another dimension to them. And there was even a line, you know, there's a passage in this poem where I'm talking about the yellow spots on the old buildings, the decayed buildings. And I could allow myself back then to look at them and romanticize them. And I think what I'm trying to capture in this poem is it's specifically how Beirut has made it possible for me to contemplate love and loss not as two opposites, but rather as two concepts that are just, you know, they're part of the same concept. I could sit down with both of them because this is what Beirut is. With the history that it has, it's an ancient city that is living in the future, right? So this is a city that is... I would say that this is a city that is not, I wouldn't say it's between life and death. I would say Beirut itself is an attempt at life, you know? And so this poem is basically that. It's basically me attempting at looking at life when I'm looking at Beirut and living in it. I tried my best to capture this poem. I hope it's understandable. So you see, I've been in love with this woman. It's been 3 years. We've never talked, never touched. But we both know. We both know if the world ends tomorrow, we'll be up by 5, running towards each other to meet God. God is a distance between her lips and mine. And we'll kiss before the apocalypse, during the apocalypse, and after the apocalypse. I'm in love with a woman who's not your type at all. She leaves each of her 900, 5,000 windows open to let me know she's got enough room for each of my broken pieces. I'm in love with a woman, and her name is so safe in my mouth. Beirut. I live next door to a couple who keeps complaining about the yellow spots on our old decayed building. I don't have the courage to tell them. Beirut leaves scuffy stains like love notes to remind me of that post-apocalypse morning we had together. To remind me that we made it through wars we did not ask for. Carried the weight of destruction on my tummy, only knows the weight of her body after midnight. Making love like war, like when I rip our clothes off, when I rip our skin off, unset our bones, unset history, reset every house that's been brought down, bringing down every soldier to his knees, ripping every flag that's not ours, opening our fists, letting go of the hurt, opening our fists, lying down, laying everything down, our clothes, our hearts, our guns, stretching like the truth that none of us knows. Ready to make love like war. Martyrs of passion, that's how we die. Beirut and I, we make love like war. I tell you, I'm in love with a woman who's not your type at all. Beirut, a fist fight in the middle of a masquerade. Thank you.
Do you remember the moment that this poem was conceived and where it came, like when it came to you and perhaps where this poem came from?
Actually, it's this is really weird, but I remember every poem I have written, but not this one. That's something, this is my first time discovering this as I speak. I do not remember when, what year, I mean, of course, before the Beirut Poetry Slam, but I have no memory of the place or the circumstances in which I was writing this one, zero memory, which is really, really strange. But I know, like, I mean, in this poem, I'm talking about, you know, decayed buildings, a building with some yellow spots. This is the only indicator of a real world around me, because it's an actual building that is in Hamra, which was part of, you know, which inspired part of this poem.
Yeah. Maybe that I could ask you in that case about some of your other poems and the places you associate with them and these moments where poems come to you, the places where they might come to you.
There are many spaces, there are many places in Beirut that have been of huge inspiration for me. Usually these places are both liminal spaces. You know, when I talk about liminal spaces, I talk about spaces for very specific communities, very, you know, of artists, people who are willing to add a certain dimension to Beirut, you know, such as Tutta, such as Riwak, such as Alia's books, but also very, very public spaces, you know, the streets in Hamra, very specific moments that I see, you know, of the everyday life, such as people, you know, I don't know, a man selling coffee, the Bliss Street where I usually go and hang out with friends. So it's a bit, you know, it's a bit everywhere.
And do you write your poems like within the flow of life? Are you out in the city when you're writing, or is it something you go and do quietly?
I think so. There's something that my professor once said, and it really clicked in my head. The fact that the writer is always writing, and I think this is absolutely true, because I would always go back home, and I mentioned that in my letter to Etel Adnan. I would always go back home changed. When I come back home from the streets of Beirut, I always have new ideas. I always have concepts that or you know, lines that I have already written about Beirut, and I come back home and I write them down. Then I have, you know, an accumulation of lines and imageries that I can later on work on connecting together. But the process of writing is happening all the time, absolutely all the time, whether I am surrounded with people or alone or walking or sitting, always.
Yeah, and I'm curious, so these moments when you sit down and write and start to bring these things together, do you know where a poem is going?
I think, you see, the thing with my poetry is the fact that I always have similar themes. My poetry, you have read my poetry, most of the poems, if not all, always have the same themes. It's always about love, loss, Beirut, and people. And it's always intertwined. And I have thought about this before, that when I read my own poetry, I always feel like it's a double-edged sword, that I can read it either for an individual that I have in mind or for Beirut. And that happens really depending on whether I am trying to find refuge from people or I'm trying to find refuge from Beirut. You know what I mean? So I don't sit and think, what am I going to write about right now? I know that these are the things that I've been trying to figure out my entire life. Love and loss are not themes that I can really escape, specifically when you're living in a country like that. And so these things just start coming in imageries. And very often I'd have, let's say, a block, you know, or two, you know, paragraph stanzas. Later on, I'd go back to my notes and I'd notice that, yeah, you know, there's this verse, there's this paragraph that I had written. I think I would want to have it here. So it's always, you know, an interaction of a lot of things going on. I think that as someone who lives in an area like Beirut, poetry is already written for you, you know. You have it all over there. It's always the process has already started before you even know it, you know. So I don't really think about the process of writing and the topic of writing are not things that are separate. For me, it just happens.
Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah. It's very interesting you use the word refuge. Is writing a form of refuge for you?
Writing? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Writing has been the only space where I've been able to sit down and feel like I can be, because outside things are just so, I don't feel that I have control outside this space of writing, you know. Writing, the reason I love Beirut so much, or I have loved Beirut as much back then, is because I felt that I had a certain control over it through my writing. And when I talk about my best years in Beirut, I'm always referring to the years where I was basically being introduced to the poetry scene, because these poetry events that were happening in very specific places, these events for me were a break in time. They were a break from everything outside that door. Everyone who goes to a poetry night is seeking an alternative reality, specifically in Beirut, at least myself. And so it was basically a coming together process of creating something different, because things have always been not so pretty out there. And so definitely writing is, for me, a space of, it is a refuge.
Letter to Etel Adnan, 24 November, 2020. 6:40 p.m. Beirut, Hamra. I always had this little question mark around whether I am a human or a poet or both. If both, then both at the same time or both separately. This question would always come in very different forms. I cross one street in Beirut and I feel that I have walked in each of them. I come back home more aware of my forms. I know the space between my fingers the way I know every corner of the city. Upon my arrival from Damascus, the moment I set foot on this land, I inhale and recall the bodily smell of every person I had touched in the name of love and all that goes beyond and below it. Do others feel this way? Do they see Beirut or do they look at it? Do I look at it or do I create it? Is it just the wary face of a service driver? Is this just graffiti on the wall? Is this just an old woman carrying groceries? Is this just a child on a bicycle? Is this just the smell of roasted coffee and the evident green color of thyme? Is this just Yasmin Hamdan singing on the radio? Is this just a decayed building covered with a jasmine tree? Is that all that there is to it?
At the start of your letter to Etel Adnan, you say, I always had this little question mark around whether I'm a human or a poet or both. Could you tell me a little bit about what you mean by this?
Yeah, so this question is a very complex question that, I mean, if we read this letter, it starts with this very question. It's a whole reflection on whether I am a human or a poet. And if I am both, which one constitutes me mostly? I think that the reason it's so hard to respond to this question is because I think it's through poetry that I live. It's through poetry that I am capable of being here. It's through my reconstruction of things that I'm able to cope with them. And I don't think I want to do it any other way. Absolutely not. Whether it's more painful or more soothing to perceive the words as what someone else might call artificial, this is my way of doing it. I cannot exist in any other way. And so I don't really know what it means to go out and to look at the building. This is going to be painful to say, but to go and look at a building in Beirut that is very much decayed and just perceive it as such, I cannot but add another dimension to it. I don't think I am ever able to snap out of the world I have created in my poetry. I cannot see Beirut for what it really is or for what other people, you know, what other people see it. I have created a different world and I cannot live outside of it. This is a very haunting question. It's one that I have a hard time talking about, actually, because I cannot separate these two worlds. In addition to that, I think with the explosion and everything that has happened in Beirut, it put me in a state of mind where I had to ask this question. And it's an ugly question. It's not nice. You're basically being forced out of your own reality, right? Yeah, yeah.
I never had to question my reality as an artist until I experienced loss, until Beirut was gone, until my muse was killed. No statement has been released about the port explosion for 4 months now. No one knows who did it. I'm still trying to make sense of it. But one thought at a time, one question a day. 2 months ago, on a Tuesday like this, I placed my Iroquois on the stove and waited for the water to boil. I asked myself, who could have possibly done it? 2 months later, today, I placed my Iroquois on the stove and I asked myself, is this my fault? Did I do it? Did I kill Beirut? Not only do I blame myself for killing Beirut, but also for giving it life in the first place. What's that strange thing we artists do? Craft and live in paper towns, then cry the moment we're forced to realize that they got burned to ashes. Now you wonder, how do you keep writing if your muse died?
Later on in the letter, you say, I never had to question my reality as an artist until I experienced loss, until Beirut was gone, until my muse was killed. What are you saying here? And it seems to be about everything that's happened too in Beirut and also your decision of whether to stay in Beirut.
Yeah. So just as I was saying, the reason Beirut has transformed my poetry is the fact that it offered me a space between love and death, love and loss. It offered me a space between them that I could explore. I could freely write to Beirut without really thinking that she's or it is going to ever respond. But when you're walking in the city and everywhere you go, you are just seeing destruction, the love and loss are so close to each other, there is barely any space between them where you could create something else, where you can plant a tree, where you can build different places. This is basically Beirut telling me, hey, yo, this is Beirut responding. You know, this was the time where I felt like, okay, no, I cannot go further on living or writing to Beirut thinking she's never going to respond. This was my reality check. You know, it has forced me to sit down with a reality that I did not want to see. This is basically what this line is about.
Has that meant, did that mean stopping writing for a while?
Yeah. This was horrible. I mean, it's very hard to talk about it until now, because being forced out of so much hope that you've put in the city, because really, you, I have chosen to construct a whole different world my entire life and live in it. I was not living in the city. I was living in a third space that I have created. Between the city and between what I could add to the city, I found something that was in the middle. It was satisfactory. But these places are no longer, I'm even talking physically. These places have disappeared. They're closed. And this line where I say that I bumped into a friend and I asked her if she's been writing, this question was the main question that I was asking to my friends, and they were asking to me every time we see each other, have you been writing? No.
Wow.
So I'd say it was too much. You had to mourn the city you're not acquainted with, right? And you also had to mourn a collective city that you have been building with a certain community in these spaces that I'm talking about. So there was that to mourn on one hand, and a lot of shame, because you can no longer use the unit that you used to use to create your paper town, your city, the beautiful Beirut, the romanticized Beirut, where a lot of people have died and are hungry around you. A lot of people are being displaced right now. I personally could not use these words to reconstruct something. There was no space for reconstruction for me. Beirut being the muse, if the city is gone, the inhabitant is gone. And if the muse is gone, the poet doesn't write. I was saying this is a piece that I had hysterically written. I was in my apartment in Hamra, I think a few months after the explosion, only a few months. And there still is no report about what happened. Nobody knows. There's no narrative, nothing. In all of these circumstances, I mean, what can I write about? Really, what can I write about? What is my role here?
Given that this letter was written in this very specific moment after the explosion at the port, I'm curious, given that so much has happened in Beirut in the 2 years since you wrote this, how this has evolved for you, and obviously you've returned to writing.
So there was a phase after the explosion where I did not write anymore, right? And as I said, there was a lot of guilt and shame. In addition to that, there was also the COVID thing. And I think this is very important for me to mention because these things happened, you know, at the same time. There was the COVID and the explosion happened. And then the crisis was already happening. And we also have to go back to the revolution. Even in the revolution, I had stopped writing. The difference between the revolution and the blast was that in the revolution, I stopped writing willingly because I knew that there was something else I wanted to focus on. I knew there was a chance of getting out. I was very much willing to leave these spaces that we have created. It was a collective. I and the people who used to write and perform together would go down the streets, right? I didn't feel like I had to create an alternative world with these very specific places in Beirut and these coffee shops with these people to be able to live. I felt like, okay, this is our chance. This is the time to extend these spaces to the public, you know? And I even have videos of me performing in the streets with my friends, you know, at 5 a.m. would wake up really, really early at the beginning of the revolution to close the streets. And to, you know, entertain each other, we'd bring cards, we would bring, you know, books, we'd perform poetry. It was really, I stopped because I knew that I no longer had to write the city. You know what I mean? I knew that we could reconstruct the city with bricks instead of words as units. It was possible. I no longer had to live in something alternative. And I was so thirsty for that. I really wanted that. When the revolution started to die out, this was really hard. I did not go back to writing around this time because I had nothing to say. The explosion made me write this letter. The revolution dying out made me write nothing. And I think this silence back then was already enough of a very long letter. I was very disappointed, you know, because I was willing to get out of my world and, you know, try to use real things for the very first time. Later on, as COVID happened and the revolution started, we went down the hill. Even when I tried writing, this is when it got even more depressing for me. The places I used to go to perform, back then I used to write for performance, for people. There was a collective of people creating something, right? I also had a very tangible connection with the creative process itself. Because you're writing, the poem that I'm writing, it doesn't end there. I'm going to take it. I'm going to go to this coffee shop. Already this, the fact that there's a place adds to the poem. The fact that there's a public adds another dimension. And when people go back home and I go back home, this is a third dimension too. So imagine you go from that to being at home alone. The thing you used to live off, which is writing and performance at the same time, has no place anymore. This was absolutely hard for me. When I was home with COVID going on and the revolution dying out, I felt that, you know, I don't know who to write to anymore. If these places, if I'm not performing for anybody, I don't know what to do because I need these people to be able to write. This is a project. So if I'm going to be at home alone, I can't be carrying on this entire project alone.
I hadn't realized the extent to which it was a collaborative project, poetry. You think of it so much as a solitary poet, but in your case, not at all.
No, not at all. These events were happening every week. And my writing back then was so different because I would go with an unfinished poem, knowing that this was just a project. I'm going to go there. The rest of the poem will be written through the performance, through the people, through the interactions that come even after the performance. You're taken out of this construction project, this very collective project, you know. These people became a family. So going back to the process of writing, during the COVID and the revolution, I wasn't able to write because there was no one. I didn't have the people I used to have with around me. And I didn't have a place of performance. Even the online thing wasn't really working for me. I didn't feel it. You need to have the place. These places, these real places in Beirut are the thing. This is where the poetry is created. And so I even started wondering, because when you look at written poetry, there's a certain dimension to it. It's more official. It has a different language. And it's more solitary. I'm giving you a book. You're going to go and read it alone in your room. It's not, there isn't a live interaction going on. There isn't a space where you're creating with the public. So this is what I was lacking. And this is why I couldn't write. Because to me, there was a purpose for writing and it was a collective project. I couldn't carry it, carry on with my writing alone. I didn't feel there was a purpose. I didn't feel there was a motivation. I didn't feel there was an inspiration. I felt very lonely. This was really a phase where spoken poetry and poetry on paper, there was a huge contrast between them, you know? And I felt very much of an outsider to the written poetry. I felt like these people don't get me. Or I can never be read by these people because they require such a very specific language. Spoken poetry is about an interaction that goes between you and the people. This is a spoken language. It's the language of the people. This is what makes it so revolutionary. So I couldn't write for a very long time. And even if I write, I keep them for myself. That would be prose. They would be very, text of where I'm expressing myself, right? It's only recently that I have been more comfortable, leaning more towards the prose. Yeah. Mm.
We will meet in September again, and it won't be a dream. I will caress your skin and watch the pink flowers grow over my balcony. And the smell of coffee will take over the narrow streets of our neighborhood. In my kitchen, you will hold me by my collar and kiss me. and I will know how to utter the name of my city again. September will come around. We will fall in love again. And it would be as if the war is declared finally over. We will anticipate the changes of every season, whatever color and weather comes along, because our warmth is constant. And on days where our chest will feel tight, and distance will seem to go beyond what is corporal, I trust the sun to fill the gaps between our hearts. Joint pulse, echoing through the waters. September will come around again, and it won't be a dream.
So this is where you are now. You're looking to move back to Beirut, right? Like, where, this is where you've come from. Like, where do you think you're going with your poetry? How do you feel about returning to Beirut now?
So, I feel that my poetry, I feel that right now it has, after this period of isolation, after, ceasing from going to these poetry nights, and this long period of, you know, exploring my discomfort towards writing and towards writing, actually, because this phase of a COVID and post explosion, the fact that poetry nights weren't happening as much anymore, and I couldn't find my scene anymore, had forced me to sit alone with my writing, to stop actually writing for people and write for myself. And so the structure of my writing has changed. It has actually very much changed. I used to write in a way, I used to organize my writing in a way that would allow me to perform it with a more or less smooth flow, you know, so poetry that could be listened to, that could be understood easily. But I think that what's happened is that I think it hasn't only been a year, it has been more than a year. In the past 2 to 3 years, I think what's happened is that my writing seems way more personal. I can personally see that in the structure of it. You know, I'm no longer thinking, how can I structure this poem after writing? I don't think about restructuring the poem in a way that would make it easy to read. I would just write because I need to. And for a long time, I thought, you know, this is not something I want to take to the public and go read it. I'm not able to do that. For a very long time, I couldn't do that. I haven't been out. It's been a long time. I haven't performed anything new. But I feel that I am willing. I think I've taken a long break. I think I've taken a break of 2 to 3 years. And I think that was... I never thought I'd think of going out and, you know, performing again. But I feel that right now my performance would be different. I don't think that... I think I'm tired of standing and shouting and I'm tired of shouting my performances, my poems. I'm tired of how do I say that, being so loud. I feel that right now I want to allow myself to just take a chair, sit down and perform things or read things even. In a sense, I feel that what I want right now is to be more vulnerable with the public, you know, basically bring the private into the public. I'm just gonna take my poems and I'm gonna sit and read them, and it's just gonna be as if I'm reading it in my room, and people are just, you know, are coming and sitting because they want to listen to me. I think I'm tired of constructing. I think right now is the time where I want to talk about my grief. I want to talk about how hard it's been. And the more recent poetry kind of show that, because I've been talking more about my personal relationship and about Beirut. I have poetry where I'm talking about how I have a poem, for example, that's called September, that I recently wrote, and where I am talking about someone I have never met, and talking about how when that person is going to kiss me in my kitchen, I will be able to know how to utter the name of my city again. And so I feel that, you know, I'm no longer putting Beirut on a pedestal anymore, and I'm no longer taking it as a refuge, or maybe sometimes I do, but I feel that, you know, I feel like I'm allowing myself to re-explore Beirut as something new. I don't know what it is to me right now. And I think this is what's going on in my writings. I'm no longer sitting and telling myself, you know, but, or my inspiration is not coming only from Beirut. It's coming from so many other places. And so I feel that there is more interaction between the elements of my life, being it the South, being it my mother, being it my lovers, being it myself, being it more specific feelings such as shame, such as guilt, such as so and so. But I feel that my writing has been way more personal, actually. Or you know what? Maybe I feel they're more real, because my older writings, I don't know. I think I was just forced to, you know, to get out of a bubble. And now these feelings that I'm experiencing are of a larger range, because I'm still figuring it out. I'm still figuring my emotions toward Beirut. And of course, that in turn would reconfigure my relationship with a lot of things, including myself. So if I were to, you know, if I were to summarize how it's going, I would say that I have shifted from a project of collective construction, and I would allow myself to say it, you know, a project of romanticizing, or maybe, you know, I don't want to be this harsh. I would say we try to see so much in Beirut. There is beauty out there. There definitely is beauty out there. I think so. I shifted from that to something more private. I would say I'm rather actually excited. I'm very thrilled to go back to Beirut. I feel that right now I'm excited to know what it's like to read this new dimension of my poetry in public. I don't know how it's going to be, and I'm very excited because I feel that this is a new phase. And I think that it's going to be fresh, because I'm not returning as someone who has won the Beirut Poetry 2018. No, I think I'm so tired of this. I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be seen as that person anymore. I just want to be, you know, in a community, feeling that everybody, you know, that we're sitting together to understand how we're feeling about Beirut at this stage of our life. I just want to feel embraced in a community again. Yeah.
Would you say that you feel a sense of responsibility for your work, for your poetry? And what do you think is the responsibility of the poet?
I do feel a very strong sense of responsibility for my work. And I would say more back when I used to perform on a regular basis. And it had nothing to do with the fact that there were people listening to me. It has nothing to do with the audience, and it has everything to do with the writing themselves, the pieces themselves that come out of me. When I'm done writing a piece, I feel that I don't recognize myself as a writer. I have a hard time feeling like, oh, this is me. I wrote this. No, my first thought is, wow, that's insane. You know, I feel that almost this automatic process in my mind, you know, this writing, I wouldn't say automatic, it's just out of practice, actually. But also, I think, you know, there is also the element, you know, the not the element, there's also the muse. After all, it does feel sometimes mystical to me. Sometimes I can sit down and write and write and write. It does sound like, you know, in the movies, but it is real. I do have this kind of poetry. I do have this kind of piece where I'm just writing and I'm not thinking. And when I'm done, I'm like, oof, that is insane. That this is a huge relief. I've had poems. Okay, how do I explain this? One of the poems that I performed for the competition, for the slam poetry competition, it was called For Honey. And this is the one that's getting published in an anthology soon. So this poem, way before writing it, I knew that it was going to come out. And someone has once interviewed me, and I, the way I describe it, it came out so naturally. I felt pregnant with this poem for almost 9 months. And I felt that, you know, for almost a year, I felt like there's something that's going to come out and that it needs to come out. It must come out. And it actually came out, all of it, in one night. I know it sounds super unreal, but this is how it happened. I was struggling because I felt like I felt like my belly was full of something, and that I needed to let it out. I remember sitting down trying to write it. I couldn't write anything. And I just woke up at 4 a.m. out of nowhere. I took my paper, my pen, and it all came out in one setting. And then later on, I thought, this is the paragraph that I need to add. This is perfect. It's whole, you know. So the writing process itself, it does demand... you cannot not feel a sense of responsibility towards it, because... It feels almost unreal sometimes. When I'm done writing these pieces, I don't see them as... I don't feel like, you know, yeah, this is me. When I look at my pieces, when I read them, I don't think, oh, me. I don't think this way. I think this is an individual product. This is a creation of itself. This is how I think. So I do feel a huge sense of responsibility for it, the way I should be delivering it, whether it's through spoken word poetry, to the public live, or through films. I do sit down and think about how it's supposed to be read, how it's supposed to be represented through, you know, visuals. To me, the text needs to be delivered with respect. And when I say respect, I mean that it needs to be valued. The words, they need to be felt, where there demands a certain stress, a linguistic stress. There must be a linguistic stress. You must, you know, go up with your tone, go down. You must move your body. All of these are things that I do think about.
Regarding your second question, I think this is a huge question. I think this is a very hard question to answer. What is the responsibility of an artist? Because, I mean, if you're... It's hard to answer, because I still am trying to figure out who I am when I'm not writing, and who I am when I am writing. And what goes on between these intervals, if there is any gap, you know, anyway, in the first place. The reason I find it hard to answer is because there is a certain pressure. There is, if you're asking what the responsibility of an artist is, but in time of crisis, we also need to remember that trauma is silencing. And the silencing effect, it can be happening on a collective level. So can I be expecting more from an artist just because this person, you know, usually has the words for it? I myself, when the blast happened, when everything started to fall apart, my only way of dealing with this was telling myself, listen, you have to take care of yourself. You just need to do whatever you need to do. And that meant me completely disappearing. At the same time, I had a friend, you know, I have a friend called Majid Shidja. I told you about him. He's the founder of the Beirut Poetry Pod, the Writer's Block, and the Beirut Poetry Slam. He was one of the main founders. After I completely disappeared, he would see me sometimes. He'd bump into me, and he would actually reprimand me. He would tell me, you have not been showing up, and that's not fine. First of all, you owe it to yourself. Secondly, you owe it to the scene. We cannot be operating alone. And third, you owe it to people. And I think it only makes sense. That only makes sense because the main reason I disappeared is because, not the main, I mean, one of the reasons I disappeared is because I didn't feel that there was a scene anymore. I tried to get out there, and I didn't feel like I could relate to any of these people, that they did not understand how I felt and what I was talking about and which days I was referring to. And so if I don't show up, that means that there will be no scene. And if there will be no scene, there will be less artists coming. And if there are no artists coming and no performances happening, no collective performances happening, people are not going to have an outlet for their own pain, for their sufferances, for how they're feeling, or for the very little things that they would like to appreciate, you know, in times of crisis, like love and bonding and food. I don't know, whatever. But you know what I mean? So if I mean, there is, I think, yes, I cannot deny that there is a sense of responsibility. If you have that talent, I suppose that you should be using it as much as you can. And I think Majid was right. I mean, I couldn't push myself further. This was my maximum, but it would be horrible. It would be absolutely terrifying if everybody, you know, all artists retract. Because if there is no scene for art, then how do you break the silence? How do you open a discussion about trauma? How do you open this discussion that needs to be had? Anyway, this is what I'm trying to say. I hope it's making sense.
Thank you so much for speaking to me. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Rebecca, for offering the space. It was a pleasure. Huge pleasure. Thank you.
This was Artery with Isa Kavegia, a podcast on art, authorship and anthropology, supported by the UK Arts and Humanities Research Council. Hope to speak with you again soon.